Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 310. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee is with me here at the Casa de Cold Coffee. The expansive grounds are just getting bathed in the sun on this beautiful Thursday afternoon here in Las Vegas. I can see the planters outside that the gardeners have been tending to. The petals are opening up as spring rolls in.
The palm trees have finally been taken care of.
Oh, y'all, they've been trimmed back. They look really nice, actually.
Yeah, they've
the palm trees look good. That gardener finally got off his butt and got
working.
He finally showed up.
I'm a little worried, though, because the one on the right side, it's starting to grow up towards, like, the power lines.
Right.
At some point, I think that's going to be an issue.
Oh, it's getting awfully close to the power lines.
It is getting awfully close. You know, and it's funny, before they trimmed, like, I liked how some of them, the palms had sort of, like, arched over. So I would put a little chair in it. It was like a nice little shaded hammock.
Right.
And then when they went and cleared it out, that's kind of gone down. I was like, damn, I shouldn't have had them come trim them, but
Gardner got a little aggressive.
He was aggressive.
Trying to get a little Christmas bonus this year.
But yeah, it's good. But yeah, I mean, oh man, it's 68 degrees right now. The sun is shining. It feels so good. You of course got shorts on, but that would happen even if it was 20 degrees outside.
That doesn't give you any indication at all of the weather.
But it is about that time. It is getting that weather now.
It is beautiful here at the expansive grounds of the Casa de Cold Coffee. Now I will say, while your staff here at the Expansive Grounds always does a fantastic job, Cold Coffee, and I'm not trying to get any of the hardworking people here on the estate in trouble, I will say the guy that you've put in charge of beverage stocking has failed this week. We have obviously not paid much attention to what's going on in the refrigerator.
We haven't.
Because we are down to the end, basically. This is the scraps, and I don't mean to be rude to the fine folks of the Taiwan Beer Company. I really don't. I'm sure they're fine folks over there, but we are here with the Sweet Touch lychee fruit.
Yes, or lychee, depending on where you are. Some places in
that's
the world.
That's what we're drinking right now.
And it's
a couple of grown ass men,
pretty pink and white. Beer can.
A couple of grown-ass men talking about cage fighting.
With Sweet Touch.
Drinking some Sweet Touch lychee.
It's 3.5%. Is that good?
That's not even like a Coors Light comes in around 4.2.
Oh, does it?
I mean, this is water.
Oh, yeah.
Flavored water.
This double IPA. I had one last Hop Rising Tropical double IPA. It's 9%. So, I guess it's a good bit stronger. Well, hey, you know, I'll have to get on them and really sort of lay into them and tell them, you know, that while this is good for a change, we can't have this as the last bit.
I mean,
there is bottles of whiskey, but we don't really want to.
Could crack those open too.
You want to? Well, we can have a shot.
We'll see.
One of the breaks. We'll see.
I was going to address your staff directly, but I know that you've coached them not to make eye contact with any of the guests here.
I was like, please. Just
they were
turn
turning
your
away
backs and hide. Turn your backs and hide, folks.
Oh, man. All right, well, let's talk about, look, UFC 259, Blachowicz versus Adesanya. It is a big fight week. Three title fights in the featured bouts of this pay-per-view, and then just a stacked lineup from top to bottom. We actually just wrapped up at the press conference over at the UFC Apex. You know what's weird? I know we've been doing this pandemic-era MMA stuff for quite a while, but the press conference felt a little low energy to me today. I don't know if it's just what's going on in there, the fact that there's not many media, or I don't know. I haven't done a lot of these because you guys have done a couple press conferences. I feel like I've missed a couple of them because I've been gone doing like CFFC duties.
Only maybe one.
But how many have we done? I don't know what it was.
Only like one.
Maybe it's just because – is that the only – there's only been one other? Was
I
the
think
Cormier
only
one?
Been like that one.
I missed that one.
Yeah.
because it felt to me like I hadn't done one of these, which seems crazy to me. But it did. I gotta admit, it felt flat to me in there, and it wasn't the fighter's fault. I mean, maybe it was our fault as media. Maybe the questions sucked. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it could be. Yeah, I definitely don't think it was the fighter's fault. It's not like they have to fake bring heat or anything.
Right.
But there was a smaller media cartel there. But also too, you know, it's funny because to go behind the curtain.
Sure.
There's Morgan, and then there's Oscar, and then there's Jose, and there were other medias, but you guys kind of powwow, and you're like, I'll take these fighters, and so-and-so is like, I'll take these fighters, and this and this.
That way we make sure everybody gets covered right away.
Sure everybody's covered.
Yep.
But normally, each person would kind of just be like, I'm just going to work the floor. So you might ask multiple questions to multiple other ones. So you asked your questions to Dana and then the main event fight, but then you didn't touch the other two fights.
Right.
So part of that, and that was the same thing for like Jose and for Oscar. So normally you set of three would ask probably twice more questions.
Yeah.
So like after it got through you guys, I was standing there like, holy shit. Like if nobody else asks a question, like we're going to be done really, really quickly. But you're right. It did kind of feel a little flat.
No, you're right. You know, and you know what? We did that to kind of spread things out a little bit.
Just to make sure everybody's covered.
Sure everybody's covered. And also, like, sometimes I feel like I'm asking questions for so long. I mean, I still ask like 8 questions. I asked Jan 3. I asked Izzy 3. I asked Dana 2. So I'm asking 8 questions to kick off the press conference. And I would just sit there. To be honest with you, I'd go through all 6 fighters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I always am, like, really self-conscious that, like, oh, God, here's more. And I do, and you know what? And this is probably me watching social media when I shouldn't. You know, and I'll get the criticism. Like, Jesus Christ, let other people ask a question.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I get a little self-conscious that, like, yeah, maybe I'm being selfish with the mic and other people need to ask more questions. But you're right. Once you get through
it. Well, I think it just tailed off real quick. It tailed off really, really quick. Because then some of the others were like, oh, I guess we have to ask something, you know, and so they would sort of, I would think in those instances, especially like today, I would have been fine if you guys would have doubled back in, like
kinda
let them
do
the thing and then you come back in, especially if there wasn't a lot of others, but people did. I mean, others asked questions, so it wasn't like it just went and we were done after you three asked the whatever, but in general, to, you know, and this is not fighter's fault, the only bit of any sort of like quasi heat that just simmered was the fact of Jan trying to tease Aljo a little bit, and Aljo, but with the translation,
they have to go through Sayat, who's his manager.
It dies in translation.
It's kind of comical, but it doesn't work.
Yep. You know, as much as he's like, I'm talking, I'm looking at you, then I'm gonna look at my translator as he says it, and then I'm gonna try to find a spot to look back at you, and it's like, it lost all sort of heat. So like, everybody was just very respectful. So it didn't have that sort of, I can't wait till somebody puts a burn. Like, Izzy didn't say one sort of, like, ooh, in-your-face burn. Like, I was half expecting him to say something. But, I mean, Jan's never carried himself in a way to talk shit. So it's like,
yeah, what do you say to that guy?
Are you going to be the guy that just talks shit to talk shit? You know, and that doesn't seem like that's Izzy's MO either. You know, like, if his opponent says something, he'll be more than happy to tee off and do whatever. But none of that played out. Jan's not the type of guy to do it. So there's 1 out of 3. And Amanda never talks trash.
Right.
And
how are you going to talk trash to her? Like, this fake-ass 2-division champ, she's never beaten anybody. Like, what?
I bet you are terrible at getting up in the morning to take care of your kid. You know, it's like there was nothing you could say to her.
Yeah.
It's not like Megan was going to say anything anyways.
Yeah, she's not a trash talker anyway.
She's not a big trash talker either.
But even if you were a trash talker, how do you trash talk Nunes?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, goat.
and maybe it's just the fact that we're looking at, you know, so you guys are up there saying like, hey, this could be possibly maybe one of the best cards that plays out in 2021.
Yeah.
And this is the press conference associated with it. But when you think in those terms, it felt very small.
I was thinking maybe that has something to do with it too. Like when you juxtapose it against the fact that this is like the biggest card.
Yeah.
And then it could be
one of the biggest cards, maybe not in terms of how it overall does, but very rare. I mean, it's been a while since the UFC's put 2 title fights, it feels like, but to put 3 on the card, it's been a long time.
Plus deep prelims,
right?
Solid main card. I mean, it's just a big one. But yeah, I don't know. I don't want to sit here and complain. And I just it felt a little flat to me in there. And I don't know exactly how to tie it all together. But I'm still excited about the card, man. I really am still excited about the card. I did want
to
say
I was excited. It's still, even just to see them all in a room. That's the first time we've seen that many people, and we didn't do one person at a table.
Right.
Then he leaves, and then another. And everybody was like, why can't we just all get them in a room? Here it was.
Yeah.
Here's what they were asking for. This is what everybody been saying. Please let them be in the same room so they could look at each other, so that they could be there, so we could see how everybody reacts. Even there was some funny seeing Izzy's face reacting to, like, the mouse comment that Peter Yan made, right, you know, or whatever. So, like, that was awesome. So there was that whole thing that was very different than some of the other things that we saw. So,
by the way,
that aspect was kind of cool.
Should say, we did have the top six fighters on there from UFC 259. We were supposed to have Leon Edwards and Bilal Muhammad, who headline next week's event. We find out as we get there, oh, by the way, they're not going to be there. We were asked, you know, hey, what's going on? We were told, hey, Dana will address it right off the top, but they will not be here. Dana says, listen, COVID-19 protocol is preventing them from being a part of this press conference, but don't worry, the fight is still fine. Now, I got to say.
Thank goodness.
Oh, well.
When did Bilal fight?
I don't know that I.
That was like so recent, wasn't it?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. But, I mean, here's the thing is that. One of my questions for Leon was going to be, hey, you know, as you're sitting here right now, you know, does this feel real? Like, are you finally back? Or
you're going to jinx it.
Or do you have to wait until next Saturday for it to feel real? That was going to be my question. And the dude didn't even show up. So I tell you what, I mean, I know Dana's saying it's fine. Don't worry. Everything's good. Mm-hmm. But Leon just seems snake bit right now, man. I'm worried. I'm worried that there's still a week and it's not going to come together.
Let's just not even put that
on. Knock on wood. I'm not
knocking on wood for him. That would probably have been a possibility. Not that Bilal talks a lot of shit, but Bilal is quick-witted as well. But Leon is never afraid to talk shit.
Right.
That could have brought a little spark.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That could have brought some spark to it. So maybe that was it. Maybe just also coming in and immediately having that just thrown at you was just like, another what else can happen? What else can happen? Every fight week that we've had recently, there's always been
something. There's
always something that's happened. I mean, I guess that's the nature of where we are in the terms of we are still in this middle of this pandemic, or hopefully towards the end part. You know, let's not even say middle anymore. Let's just say we're towards the last portion, the later third part of it. So we've been dealing with this so often, so many random stuff, fights being called off. I hope they just kind of got all their ducks in a row. But yeah, for this to happen again, it was just like, oh, not again, you know. But at least it seems everything's still good with the fight. It's just a matter of them just putting their ducks in a row and making sure that everything's good with the COVID protocols or whatever.
No doubt.
But
proud to announce, by the way, I am now fully vaccinated. I got my second shot a couple days ago. So just for anybody that's out there thinking about it or concerned about it or whatever, I got the Pfizer version was the one I was given. I wasn't given a choice, by the way. You just take what they give you. But I had no adverse reaction whatsoever. The second shot, in fact, even hurt my arm less than the first one did. So, I mean, if you're thinking about it or concerned or worried about what the experience is like, I guess I'll just tell you, like, for me, from my point of view, you know, my arm hurt a little bit on the first one, but that was it. Just my arm hurt a little bit. The second one,
you saw.
Yeah, exactly. The second one, my arm didn't even hurt as much, and I really, I mean, I felt a little fatigue maybe over the last couple, you know, day or so, but at the same time, like, I'm always fatigued on fight week. You know what I mean? It's just,
fight week's long, long hours.
Yeah, which is every week now. So
yeah.
I don't really feel that much more tired. But anyway, so go out there and get in.
Well, right. Good job. Congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm just encouraging everybody to get out there. Yeah, you got your first one on the same
Tuesday,
day, right?
On Tuesday. So yeah, so next 3 weeks out, I'll get my second one.
Right ahead of UFC 260.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be in Texas now.
I know.
UFC President Dana White revealing that,
hey, Houston, pick up a call. Somebody's trying to get in touch with you.
It is pretty funny. Like, so basically, for anybody that doesn't know, Texas, my home state, the governor there just decided that for whatever reason, the pandemic's over. Yeah. And he's opening up everything 100%, no more government restrictions whatsoever, and no mask mandate at all. Now, as I understand it, I don't live there anymore, but as I understand it, businesses can still institute their own policies if they want to. They can ask you to put a mask on. They can limit their own seating capacity and that sort of thing. But the government is not going to tell you that
who
you have
would do
to.
That?
So I knew immediately as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, we going to Texas soon.
Yeah.
And so I asked Dana about that today, and he said, absolutely. I've already called. But I love the way he phrased it because he's like, call Dallas. Dallas said no, but we're working on Houston. It's just like, Hey, Houston.
Yeah. Hey, you awake?
What you got going, Houston?
What you got going on? Let's talk.
Dallas didn't hit me back, but we giving Houston that call late in the night.
That's just crazy. I mean, and you think about it, you know, as much as you want to, even if you're there and say you've been doing all the right things, following all the steps, following all the guidelines, and then have them say, okay, well, we're going to remove everything, but if you still want to do it, go ahead. I can imagine who, as a business person, because especially in Texas, I know people here are like, I've ran into people that are like, well, I'm not going to take my business to someone that asked me to wear a mask. I'm just like, bro, they're just trying to do what everybody tells them to do.
Right.
Like, don't hate on the business.
Playing the part.
Man. Some people are literally so angry and so hateful at some of these places that I can only imagine that if I was actually doing business in a place where they gave me the option to just say, screw it, you can have full capacity. You could do whatever. You're free to go. Who would be the person that says, well, I think I probably should still stick with the some, maybe 50%, you
yeah,
know,
man.
Even knowing that the store That's right across the street or just down the road is going to open fully. You know that everybody's going to go there because it's just crazy.
People aren't going to do anything unless you make them do it straight up. That's going to be
crazy.
Going to be crazy.
Well, I mean, that's the kind of thing. They'll just have to monitor it. I mean.
But here's what I want to see. Here's what's going to be interesting about it. Is let's say we go to Texas. Let's say it's 3 weeks from now. Let's say they make this move. I think 3 weeks is a little bit of a quick turnaround. He said we might do it. And listen, they did move, you know, a pay-per-view before from Vegas to L.A. in less than a week. However, that was during a different era when you didn't have all these COVID protocols and all that. Now, I know because here's what I wonder. I have to believe that there would still be COVID testing for the fighters themselves. Maybe I'm wrong, but I can't imagine.
If the commission, who knows, but the commission's run by the governor.
So maybe they would.
So I would say if the governor is like, no, you guys are free to go. We've opened up everything, so maybe they wouldn't test.
You don't think the UFC would internally do it for its own employees and fighters?
Dana seems like he's like, I don't care at this point.
Boy,
I don't think they're, I mean, they're making them do it now because they have to do it here because Nevada says so.
Sure.
But if Nevada said they didn't have to, there's no way Dana would tell
them. I literally just said nobody would do something unless you make them do it.
Yeah.
So you might be 100% right. I mean, if we go to Texas, it's just
it'd be
willy-nilly,
and that's
have at it.
The only thing that I think would maybe take a second that which maybe wouldn't be a big deal is that I know right now to try to go some places with the restrictions and other stuff, you got to think of all the venue employees that are brought in to help build the octagon, you know, set everything up. They would need to have to make sure that those people were readily available and on staff. I imagine that the venues or whatever have a list of people that they could just call them right back and like, hey, guys,
I'm sure they're ready.
We're back in business.
I'm sure they're ready to get
that's
people
the only,
working.
Yeah, that's the only hiccup I would think. Because,
but what about
this? The octagons are already – they're on trucks. They're ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
But what about this? Whether it be a fighter or a UFC employee – or maybe even an arena worker wouldn't work because they're already local. But, okay, how about that? A fighter or a USC employee, let's say they go to Texas. We're just wide open. We're not doing nothing. And they get sick, and they get real sick, right? I mean, don't you think there would be some potential legal repercussion for the UFC to be like, hold on, couldn't they sue perhaps? And, again, I mean, I'm no legal expert, but it's like you have been taking all these steps for a year to protect everyone's safety, and now all of a sudden you just go – don't you think that would open them up to some potential legal exposure?
But think about us. Before all these events, usually every month, what do we have to sign as well to be able to work the event?
Event participation agreement.
We have to sign an event participation. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't already, they make their employees, which would be sort of really weird to say, yeah, this is your job, but oh, by the way, will you sign this document that says that we can't be held accountable that work in this stuff? Because already the internal pressures to do what you think. I mean, like, I worked so many crazy overtime, whatever hours, just because you felt like you had to do
it. Right. Because that's the culture of the company,
because that's
right?
The culture of the company. So most of them will want to work their butt off and want to attend or do whatever. So I could see where they would sign any particular thing, even though probably to have some legal ground, should something have to, you would not want to do that.
Right.
But there would be there would be massive amount of pressure to sign the document, or you wouldn't be able to go work the event, I would imagine. They would just tell you, we'll just stay in Vegas and work the Vegas event or whatever. I mean, they have enough staff to do that, especially in terms of PR, in terms of probably operations. In terms of what is it, the uniform and the people that do that, the people that handle their food stuff. I'm sure there's probably enough people that would sign off on it, but you know how the UFC is, that they would literally cover their butt. But you're right. I mean,
and listen, fighters are in the same boat because they're trying to get a paycheck, right? They need to get that money, so they sign it away.
They sign the same thing.
And they're an independent contractor. They'd sign it. God, it's interesting. It's weird too because I'm happy we're moving in the right direction. Like I've told a lot of people this, man. After I got my first shot, I felt this strange psychological uptick. You know what I mean? It just wow, after a year of us just living in this stuff and being like, well, when the vaccine comes around, well, you know, finally I got the vaccine. And I was it just made me feel good. Like, we're moving forward. Like, we're working towards getting back.
Right.
So, dude, I'm 100% excited about the idea of let's start getting back to real life. Let's get back to what we were. But I don't know, man, just to, 3 weeks from now to have a full arena full of people, that just – I don't know. And
how quickly did that Abu Dhabi crowd come together, though? That was kind of really weird as well. It wasn't a full crowd, but
yeah, at least it was only 2,500. But man, if they go
in, came together in like a week.
If they go in and sell out 17,000 and people just shoulder to shoulder, and I don't know, man. I
could see in Texas where there would be a massive outpouring of people just to show support. I can see where if there was any state where maybe at least the first time out they were like, let's go support the UFC. I bet old DT, old Don, would be like, hey, let's support the UFC for them trying to push and do the right things. They're putting on an event in Texas. Let's show up and give them support. That would be a state where I could see where everybody could maybe there would be some sort of rally to attend the show. But I think anywhere else, people are still a little bit leery of going places with that many people.
Yeah.
If there's no controls and keeping, even recently they upped the amount of people that could go to the Vegas night shows. So there's still decent distancing. But I will tell you, I watched that game a couple nights ago, and the crowd that was there a little bit bigger. It was so amazing
to actually hear crowds.
To hear
again.
The crowd.
Yeah.
And the players thrived off of it. And it was just so fun. And it just felt for a minute. I forgot that I was watching a game in a venue that was under current restrictions or whatever.
Dude,
it felt amazing.
I'm telling you, man, that when I talk about that press conference feeling flat today, if we'd had a crowd in there that was cheering and booing, I think about the New York crowds, obviously they're the best of all.
Oh,
but
my gosh,
but even some Vegas crowds where at least you're getting some,
some
claps. They're booing us for our questions. You know what I mean? Whatever, a little something. So, I'm excited about the opportunity to get them back. But a full arena 3 weeks from now, it just doesn't sound like a good idea for me. And I'm not the conspiracy guy. I'm not I've been kind of down the middle on this, and I don't want to politicize it. But it just seems like a little bit of a weird idea to do 3 weeks.
Well, at least you're vaccinated. So, because that's the thing. Say they open it up and you're on press row, but you have the option of wearing a mask or not.
I'd wear a mask.
I probably would too, but you're also, though, you're in a different boat now as well.
My wife is diabetic, and so she's high risk. I always say, I don't think that my kid would get sick, but if something happened to my kid, if it turned out that, he had one of these heart defects, these long-haul things that are happening, and it happened because I was being careless, I don't know how I could live with myself to think that something happened to my son. So I just want to be careful. I don't feel for my – especially now that I'm vaccinated. I mean, my wife is vaccinated now too, so I guess I can worry about that a little bit less as well. But just the idea of, everybody – I'm not even worried so much about my own personal health. It's just – that many people being together in an enclosed environment right now just doesn't seem like a great idea.
Can I make an Asian joke?
You're part Asian.
I know.
Mike Perry says you're good.
You know how things, everybody always says Asians are smaller?
Yeah.
Let me show you this.
Okay.
The double IPA.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a little bit shorter.
It's a little smaller. I was like, is this a 12-ounce can? And I couldn't see it. It might be in some sort of weird area, but it's 330 milliliters. What does that say that is in milliliters?
355 millimeters.
Not only is it a fruit beer,
but you get 25 less milliliters.
We're getting less. They Asianed us.
Oh, man. Sweet touch lychee. Just not the same.
The Asian in me is very upset.
We need some of that. We need to get rid of that lychee and get that latchkey. You know what I'm saying?
I see what you did. Ooh, this is good. It's good, though.
It's good.
Whoa.
I mean, it does seem like something.
I feel pretty.
It does seem like something that you'd sit outside on a 70-degree mm-hmm. afternoon in the spring.
They said it has lychee. Some people say lychee, it tastes like a grape with a hint of rose. And I can taste a little, like, sort of like a rose or something. But
grape with a hint of rose. I like that. All right, let's talk about the face-offs today. Two observations I wanted to make from the face-offs, because we didn't get a ton out of the press conference and the quotes and that sort of thing. But I did, first of all, like what Israel Adesanya did, at least I think what he did. Of course, Israel Adesanya moving up to challenge for the light heavyweight title against Jan Blachowicz. They did their face-off, as you typically do. Israel was relaxed, as you'd expect him to, a little bit of smile on his face as they faced off. And then they do the thing where they face him forward. And when they face him forward, the champions get their belts. You know, obviously, you get that photo op. Mm-hmm. Jan got his belt. They handed Izzy his belt, and Izzy handed it right back to David Lockett from PR and was like, I don't want it. And so he stood there. And I think that was, you know, one of those mental statements, right? Like, I'm challenging for – I'm the challenger. Like, I'm going
it's
up
the battle
right
for
now.
The middleweight belt.
That's it. The light heavyweight belt. That's right. I don't want my middleweight belt because right. I'm not the champion right now. I'm coming in as – I think he
yep.
– even though
that's what he was trying to do.
That's what I think. Even though he's the betting favorite, I think he is – you know, they've been pretty open about what a challenge this is, and they don't see this as some gimme fight or whatever, and they take it as a real challenge. And I agree, you know, because – I mean, it's not difficult to break this fight down if you're even a remote observer of MMA, right? Israel is obviously a better striker, craftier, great movement. His speed is going to help him. His agility, his angles, all those things are great. But at the end of the day, if Jan Blachowicz hits him with that legendary Polish power, it's lights out.
I mean, Izzy ticks off every mark when it comes to skills, speed, everything that you could describe in what is the fighter that you think is going to take the outcome. Mm-hmm. He can almost capture it all. But then there is that legendary Polish power on the opposite side.
Change
and
a
decent chin.
Yeah.
Like, Jan's got a good chin. He's got good durability. He's got a good endurance. But he has that power. I mean, I told myself after that last fight when he, who was it, Reyes? I was like, all right, for the next fight, I'm not going to doubt Jan. And this is before this
Except
came
they made
out.
The matchup with Adesanya. And they're the, like, and then
I'm just like I homewood for Derek, I'm sticking to my guns, and I picked Jan.
Did
for
you
this
really?
I stuck with the Polish power just because I said that I wouldn't. And I don't believe that we're going to see what we saw happen with Costa, where Costa just shut down.
Mm-hmm.
We saw nothing of the power. We saw nothing of him moving forward. It looked like just a different person. Now, if Izzy somehow just does his thing, like he is a live-action anime show where he just controls somehow the mind of his opponent and he just wins him over to where they can't move, they can't do anything.
And it happens.
I forget how they say it in Naruto. You're caught in his jutsu, and then you have to break out of the jutsu. That could happen, and maybe we don't see the striking, but honestly, with Jan, it's just we just need that one. You just need one good, solid hit to hurt Izzy. Izzy's been so good. We saw him get hurt by Gastelum, and Gastelum was just sheer power, just sheer force, just kept coming. I think Jan hits harder.
Yes.
And he has better cardio, and he's just bigger.
Yes.
He's the bigger guy. I will say to that, though, when they faced off today, Izzy's a big dude.
I know. When they faced off,
Izzy's a big dude.
I will say I was
Holy
a little
cow.
Bit surprised at seeing the standing fit. Now,
Holy
I will say
cow.
This. He also had a big puffy jacket on.
Right.
So, I mean, he's definitely taller than Jan. He's definitely taller than Jan. But as they stood just, you know, strength-wise or like kind of thickness-wise, it did seem like, wait, you know, Adesanya's not the skinny clown. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, but he did have a big, thick, kind of like puffy jacket on as well. So maybe that kind of created an optical illusion. But I'll tell you what, man. I was looking at the stats for this going in, the stat sheet the UFC sends out. I was kind of interested to see this. You know, you talk about the fact that Adesanya gets hit. Blachowicz in his career – the strikes absorbed per minute is 2.74. Adesanya is 2.33. It's not that far behind. You know
right.
what I mean? So, yeah, Adesanya's taking some shots. You know, we think of him as kind of like this slick mover.
Right.
You know, able to now, his striking defense rate, 65.2%. That's pretty damn strong. But he does take some shots, and he can't take shots from Jan. So I liked what he did with that belt thing. I did think it was funny too that Dana was like, "If you cut, because I know you're, you know, looking through your lens."
I didn't see, but I kind of heard it a little bit.
So Dana's like, "Give him his belt," and Locke's like, "He doesn't want it," and Dana's like, give it to him anyway. Yeah. Like, we want the picture with both guys with their belts on. So I like that part. That's one thing I took away from the face-offs. The other thing I wanted to take away from the face-offs, too.
Because that's what's different about that. It's different than, like, say, if it's like even when Tony Ferguson brought his out for Khabib or whatever. I think he put it on the ground and he left it, but it's not like Dana was like, "No, hey, pick that back up.
Yeah.
Pick that back up." They're like, No. This is legit.
Dana wants the imagery. Remember I think about that. Remember when they gave Ronda the belt and Ronda didn't want to touch the belt and he was like, "Take the fucking belt."
They know what they're doing.
It's all about the imagery, man. It's all about the imagery. The other thing, if in case anybody watched the face-offs, and the reason this stands out to me is because actually I heard somebody say it next to me. If you see Megan Anderson and Amanda Nunes face off and you go, "Oh my God, Megan just towers over Amanda Nunes." Now, she is taller than Amanda Nunes. Yeah. There's no question. Megan's a big girl, but she had on very tall heels.
Yeah.
Like, so if you see it and you're like, "Oh my God, like there's a way bigger size difference than I thought."
Well, if I can go off memory, didn't Cyborg tower over her as well?
Yeah.
Like, don't let that height fool you. Like, height isn't punching power. Amanda is
Cyborg had on
so,
some heels too.
Yeah. Well, maybe she did. But yeah, Amanda is just so strong. You know, they're going to coin the phrase mom strength after this.
Ooh.
You know, like people always say dad strength, dad power, you know, cowboy. What would they call cowboy after it? It was whatever, after he had his kid. I want to say they were just saying like dad cowboy or dad strength or dad something. But watch, I wouldn't be surprised to see an even more focus. Something that's fighting even harder now that she has a kid to take care of.
So here's the thing. We already kind of laid out why the main event is so intriguing, right? I mean, it is speed versus power. It is movement versus power. It is a big challenge for Adesanya. I picked Adesanya, but I will say I think a
lot of our staff did.
I'm worried about him getting clipped, but I just think he's so special. Now, listen, the one that really intrigues me is Petr Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. I think that's a phenomenal, you know, clash of styles. I'm very intrigued by that fight. The one in the middle, the co-main event, the women's title fight. Listen, it's hard, right? I mean, we say it all the time. When you're talking about the John Jones of the world, the Demetrius Johnsons of the world, the Khabib Nurmagomedovs of the world, it's hard to pick against them, right? And Amanda Nunes is right up there. But if you're looking for something, I mean, it may seem silly, but the addition of a child, while on the one hand, it can be like kind of this galvanizing thing, right? Like now I have this, you know, this young child to fight for. And, you know, while maybe my motivation has waned a little bit because I've reached the pinnacle of the mountain, now I realize I'm trying to stack paper so that this kid right here is taken care of. So there's that.
Yep.
Then there's also, as those of us are parents can tell you, the realities of what, you know, that first year or two of life is like, where it's like never sleeping for more than like 2 or 3 hours at a time. You know what I mean? And I know Nina Ansarov, of course, her partner, is shouldering a lot of the responsibility as well. She took care of the physical pregnancy as well. So she's the physicals, and I'm sure she's taking a role as well. But look, Nina's getting ready for a fight too. Now, she's not, you know, getting ready for a championship fight, and hers is a couple months out. So I'm sure they figured out, hey, you know, I'm sure that without knowing the dynamics of home, I'm sure that Nina was like, "Hey, champ, you stay in bed, you get to sleep. Yeah. I'll wake up and get the feedings tonight and all that." But
well, even this one, that actually was brought up in conversation the other day. Is she going to have a separate room for the kid sleeping? Like, this is still a very young infant baby.
Absolutely should.
If that would probably be something they worked in. I would hope that she wouldn't just be like, "Oh no, we're cool. Let's just all be in the same room." Because you're right. I mean, like,
you want that, to as I mean, you're in love with your child and you want your family, but
you got to fight at a really, really high level. And that's why I always wondered, like, because remember, because when it brought up in conversation, they're like, "Does anybody else ever really travel with the kid?" And I was like, "Dude, Sam Alvey travels with the circus, like, massive amounts of kids." And I know at least one time I saw there was a young infant that was still in like a stroller whatever. Like, his kids were young, and I don't see him as being the guy that's like, "Oh, I need to have a second room for my kid."
No.
Like, no, he's all in. But I don't granted, he wasn't fighting for the belt or whatever, but in my mind, I just never saw him thinking like, "Oh yeah, we have to have separate." Like, that would be stupid.
Nope.
But for this, I can see where the smart decision would be like, we need to have a quiet room.
Right.
Have possibility. Even if it's just an adjoined room where they can at least shut that middle door or something. But I don't know.
I'm just you know, again, now, and I hate to say that, like, hey, man, the only way Megan Anderson's winning this fight is if she can't sleep this week because of her kid or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, a fight is a fight, and that's what makes it great. And Megan's, you know, that's one of the reasons we always wanted to see this fight was because Megan is a legitimate featherweight. She does have the height. She does have
she's
range.
She's got great size. Like, she is big for the division.
So you're like, oh, this week. But it's just, man, when you're – I feel like you need a little bit of something extra when you're facing Amanda Nunes. So I don't know, like I just want a second partner to strike,
exactly. Hold her down while you're hitting.
I just wonder, you know, I just be interested to see. I mean, she looked fresh today. I didn't see her yawning or seeming out of, you know, she seemed upbeat and good. Yep. But you know, you just wonder, you know, did that factor into anything at all? So, but to me, as you said, the trash talk didn't really come off the way you might like it to. I guess Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling. I won't say they have heat. But there has been a little back and forth, right? And, you know, they've kind of had some pokes at each other in social media. And, you know, Aljamain was a little bit frustrated because this fight was supposed to happen before. And, you know, Peter Yan couldn't take the fight. My understanding is the fight was never actually completely signed because there was a lot of, you know, kind of hassles and headaches and those things. But Aljamain kind of, I think, took offense and felt like he was being strung along a little bit. So there's some rivalry between the two. But to be honest, I don't need any of that. I'm so intrigued by these two title fights. As much as, you know, maybe anything on the schedule right now, and the fact that they're on the same card has me super peaked. But Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling, I just think are two of the best, you know, bantamweights in the world in an incredibly exciting division, and they've got that clash of styles that just look. Yan could absolutely come in there and just piece him up on the feet, or Sterling could get in there, create a little scramble. You know, he's not the greatest. He doesn't have the most, like, blast double takedowns or anything like that, but he creates scrambles and he gets to your back. And at that point, that's when he becomes the human backpack, the human JanSport, the human anaconda. You know, you just can't get rid of him. And that intrigues me, man. I could totally see him working to the back and choking Peter Yan out. And I'll be honest with you, I ended up going with Aljamain Sterling in my picks here because I do think that, again, he could face some real difficulties on the feet, but I think he's so adept at creating scrambles and so adept at maintaining that position when he gets there and making it dangerous for you that I could see him potentially getting his nose busted up, potentially getting bloodied a little bit or whatever, and still finding a way to get to the back over the course of 25 minutes and getting to that choke. Now, be careful because you don't want to wait too long. I think the earlier the better because I think Yan does kind of gain steam as things wear on, and he's so good at keeping the pace high and his striking output high. I think that would be dangerous. But I'm super intrigued by this. I went with Sterling. How about you?
I think I went with Sterling as well. I was trying to pull up the staff picks, but I want to say I went with Sterling. I think when I just looked at
it. I believe this is one that you wouldn't remember. Because I think anybody could flip-flop. To me, this is a 50-50 fight.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I initially thought of it, it just felt like there's sometimes you watch these guys where they just have momentum working in their favor, and I feel like Aljo's had it a couple times where it was working in his favor, and then maybe something would drop out. But I just feel right now he's fighting on a different level, and when I looked at him, I just thought the speed and his just quickness is gonna and his just versatility was going to sort of win over it. If he makes mistakes, if he gets too, and he has a great team behind him. I know they were talking about how, you know, some of his training was in different areas, but ultimately he's still being led by the same people. Mm-hmm. He has an incredibly smart camp behind him. I think the only thing that would really, really be a detriment to him is that if he just was one of these guys that just flies off the cuff and overextends himself, and Peter Yan's the guy that you don't want to be able to do that to.
Correct.
You make a mistake, and you know, and if he hits you with some of the stuff he can hit you, he's going to hurt you. But luckily, Aljo has a decent chin on him. I think he has incredible cardio, and he's just very, very versatile. So I picked him. I'm not sure what the stats are. If he's the upset or the favorite, I did pick him. When I thought of these three particular cards and who had the best chance to upset and overtake the existing champ, in my mind, even though most people looked at Izzy and most of the stats are saying Izzy is the favorite and all this other stuff, I still think he has a harder hump to get over to get the belt. Where when I looked at Aljo and Peter, I just felt like with Aljo's momentum, that was a fight that we'd probably see an upset. And so that's kind of why I went. I mean, it's so tough. I mean,
it's a fair way to think about it, because with Adesanya, look, he's got to outstrike a guy that can put him out with one shot. So that means he's got to execute. He's got to be perfect.
Right.
Whereas Sterling can make a couple mistakes, because Jan, he can knock you out, but it's not necessarily that one hit like you're done.
Right.
He's gonna hit you a lot. So you can make a mistake here and there, but you're going to turn to the grappling. And no matter how good his striking is, your grappling is definitely better. So you've got a different avenue. So I hadn't really thought about it that way, because technically, when you say upset, obviously Adesanya is the betting favorite. But when you talk about upsetting the champion and taking the belt away, you are right about that. As great as Adesanya is, his path is probably more difficult than Sterling's.
I think so. I mean, it's tough to just – I mean, I think I could see where a lot of people, they look at three title fights and they're like, oh, obviously the champ's going to hold on. But in this particular sport, there's no guarantee that the champ is going to hold on to the belt. We've seen the belt change many, many times. And part of me just – maybe it's just the gambler side of me or whatever is like, there's always got to be one. There's going to be one out of the three that drops, I think. And if there's – in my mind, this is the best chance for – it to happen, even though I'm the guy, but that I'm saying that while I say that I'm the guy that said that Jan is going to maintain his belt, most people would say that's the one that's going to be the one that switches over. But I'm going to go with this one. I think this fight's going to be a lot of fun. I hope it is as much fireworks as we hope and know it can be, as opposed to two guys that are very aware of their opponent's skill and their uber respectful to the point of where we don't get the action that we want because there's a lot of, waiting for someone to make a mistake. I'm going to counter this. I'm going to do this, and then, if a couple attempts don't go right to get takedowns, all right, maybe let's go back to the striking. And then if they don't throw off, I just hope I hope this particular fight with Aljo and Jan is what we think it can be. Yep. Because just like when we see what happened with Ciryl Gane and Rozenstruik the other day, that did not play out.
Don't you dare wish that upon this fight, sir. Don't you dare.
That did not play out like what we would think. So you never know. And in a fight like this, you just hope that we get 50% of what we know can happen with these two high-level strikers and a lot of fun. But
we're going to move on now so that you don't jinx this.
I know. But boy, how fun would Aljo be in the post-fight presser if he's able to get that belt?
Oh,
I'd
fantastic.
Love that dude in post-fight.
And his team as well.
Yeah.
And his team as well, man. They're a lot of fun. So three great title fights. But I'll tell you what, the three great title fights are a big part of it. But I think the reason people are excited about this entire card is that there's not a lot of kind of wasted matchups or fights that you don't care a whole lot about, especially on the pay-per-view. Before those three title fights, Drew Dober versus Islam Makhachev. Islam, of course, the heir apparent of Khabib Nurmagomedov. Not the same fighter, but, of that lineage, and certainly somebody that Khabib believes in, has continued to say is going to be a future champion at some point. But I wanted to hear a few minutes from Drew Dober, because I believe that Drew Dober, 6-1 in his last seven, I believe, is the mark. Three straight knockout victories, flying under the radar. Welcomed this fight with open arms when a lot of people don't, and I think he deserves some respect for doing that. So I thought it'd be fun to hear a couple of minutes of our media day discussion with Drew Dober.
Well, Drew, 6-1 in your last seven. The one loss came to a guy that happens to be pretty dang good. What do you feel like? Where do you stand in your career? Kind of what's clicking right now? Because it's a nice run of success for you.
I don't obsess over those numbers. I don't obsess over the loss or the wins this is news to me. I just enjoy every single moment that I'm in front of you guys and inside the cage and competing. And, I just stopped trying. Stop trying to get knockouts. Stop trying to be perfect. Stop trying to do all this stuff. And now I'm open and free to perform. And knockouts seem to be happening.
Was there a moment that you realized that that's what you needed to do?
I had to think back of, when I was competing in Muay Thai as an amateur and why, I was laying people out then and why not now? And, it somehow turned into a job in my 20s, and I thought I had to suffer. And, then the suffering showed in the cage. Then I went back to just having fun and not caring about the outcome and just performing martial arts and having fun with it. And then that's when knockouts started happening. And so I had to practice the happiness, but now it's actually true coming,
you're in an incredibly deep division, obviously, but I mean the numbers that you put together, the knockouts that you've done here, I mean, do you feel like maybe people aren't giving you the type of respect that you deserve, and would you like a little more attention to your accomplishments?
I mean, I want the attention. I want the eyes. I want the excitement. I want to be able to be in a main event in front of like millions of people, and I want people to be excited about my fights. But do I expect the respect? No. I want to earn it. And with my fight with Islam Makhachev, this is my opportunity to earn the respect, earn the eyes, earn the fans, and so I can showcase more in my next one.
It's interesting, right? Because this is the guy that it feels like nobody really wants to fight, but you seem to kind of welcome this fight. So why is that, that, you know, this is the kind of boogeyman that nobody wants, and you said, that's the guy, give him to me?
Chasing challenges is something I've done since I got into the sport. I'm not here to have a picture-perfect record and sneak to the title. And I chase failure, and through failure, I rise to the occasion, and I get glorious wins. And I did everything I possibly could in this sport, and fighting Islam Makhachev is something that really excites me. It's the challenge.
What do you think about him as a fighter? I mean, I think part of it is his connection to Habib, and so he's got kind of this aura about him or whatever. But, I mean, when you just look at the skills themselves, I mean, is he deserving of this hype, as some people say, future champion?
I mean, technically, he's super technically sound. I think he's a little bit more methodical than Khabib. And so I could see where the hype and the respect comes from. Do I entirely believe that it's he earned it, or are people giving it to him? I'm not quite sure. So I get to see his temperament and his personality come weigh-ins, and then the first round of that fight, I get to see truly if he lives up to that hype.
And it sounds like you don't force the issue so much, but when you see this fight play out in your head, I mean, do you feel like you can get another knockout and keep the streak going, or do you feel like you got to be in for a grind?
You know, I train for a fight of the night, but I expect a performance of the night. So in my mind, I've been willing to grind for 15 minutes or the three rounds of the fight, and I get to find out if he can keep up.
Last thing for me, I think anybody that knows the sport knows that this guy is dangerous, but he doesn't necessarily maybe have the name with the fans, that sort of thing. So a win here, what do you feel like you deserve? I mean, do you feel like you deserve some top names, or do you feel like this might be one where you don't jump up the rankings as much as you might like to?
I want bigger and better challenges. And so if I finish this fight fantastically, I would love to fight RDA as a main event this summer. You know, I think I'm deserving of former champions, the top guys, and all that stuff. And, you know, I want more eyes on my fight, so main event would be great. I want to fight more often. And so this summer, man, I'm taking no time off. And so my goal is to focus on Islam Makhachev, come out of that fight unscathed, and then fight as soon as possible for somebody bigger and better.
Drew, right here. Daniel Cormier has said that Islam came, obviously, when he met Islam, him and Khabib came in as just technical, like technically perfect wrestlers, but now Islam has kind of become a more technical striker compared to Khabib. Do you agree with that assessment in terms of their actual striking?
Oh, absolutely. I think if you watch Islam, I mean, he has a really good fundamental kickboxing. Southpaw, he's quick, he's fast. I don't think he has a whole lot of holes. I think he holds back because he's afraid to make mistakes. And so I think he's overall a great martial artist. And when I make him uncomfortable, I want to see what kind of mistakes he decides to make.
And we spoke with Michael Chandler when he weighed in as a backup for the Khabib Gaethje fight. And he said just when his name was when Islam was a possible opponent, his DMs blew up with people from Dagestan, like saying, like, we're going to kill you and all this stuff. Did that happen to you when you signed with?
Oh, absolutely. And I absolutely love it. Man, whether you want to see me win or want to see me lose, you're showing support to my cause, which is, man, just supporting the fight. And so I think the American audience can learn a thing or two with these other countries, especially Russia, and the fact they get behind their athletes wholeheartedly. And, man, whether it's death threats or compliments, man, I absolutely love all these messages I'm getting.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
All right, so there he is, Drew Dober, the most handsome man on the USC roster, man. He's a good dude. No, I enjoyed talking to him. I only got to do about half the media day the other day. I had some kind of personal obligations that popped up, so I only got to do about half of it, but was happy that again, the return of the in-person media days means so much to me. And by the way, it was kind of funny. Part of me wanted to run with the headline that Drew Dober says American fans should harass international athletes online. You know, the way he's like, yeah, I love it, man. They're giving me those death threats, and I just feel like the USA fans should get behind their people just like that. Like, please don't encourage that.
But that being said,
I know what he's saying,
yeah,
and he is right.
Even just at the venues or some of the other stuff. I mean, but I know we've talked about this over the years. You know, whereas the foreign fighters and the countries they come from, they rally around that fighter because that fighter represents them. Always here, while we do appreciate our American athletes here, we also really, really like the foreign guys that come to fight here.
Right.
So they become just as much favorites and beloved fighters for us as well as the local guys. So we find ourselves rooting for them, whereas the American guys are like, dude, stop rooting for them. Root for me. Can you please tell them to die? Even though you're like, I actually really like him, you know? The Olympics is probably that one where I'm like all in America, America, screw everyone else because that's our country represent other countries. But in MMA, I find it hard. I mean, while I'll still love and root for the American guys, I love the foreign fighters as well. So I'm one of the ones that's like, you know, go Drew, and then like Islam, go you too.
I know what he says. It made me crack up because I know exactly what he's saying. But part of me was like, so. You think they should give death threats to people behind the scenes? I don't think they should do that, Drew Dober. Listen, he's got a stiff test in front of him. Islam Makhachev is a legitimate fighter. But, you know, he's had some layoffs over the years, and, you know, maybe you can take advantage of that, catch him a little bit off guard, get a little bit of ring rust in there. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out, but that's a good fight as well. I should say, by the way, if you like what you're hearing, make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening to us. For me, it's Apple Music, but wherever you are, make sure that you're subscribed to us. If you can take the time to give us a rating, if you can review us, we appreciate all that. Tell your friends if it's a fun show that they're MMA fans, you know, should be listening to. We certainly appreciate that. And if you want to take your game up to the next level and help support the show behind the scenes, we appreciate your listens, but some financial support helps a lot as well. Patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow for as little as $3 a month. You can support us over there. Help us take care of some of the administrative costs and other things that happen behind the scenes. There, of course, is the exclusive home of the and a half post-fight shows where we wrap up every single UFC event, which is pretty much every single Saturday night these days. So you get that post-fight bonus episode. Also, we've been kind of previewing some of my own personal interviews. Been doing a little bit more interviews now, and we've been previewing them over there. So even before the readers of MMA Junkie get to see those interviews, you do. Like this week, it was Matt Serra, Rich Chow, Fernand Lopez. All those debuted over there well before they got to MMA Junkie. Shh, don't tell anybody about that. I'm not sure I'm allowed to do that. And then, of course, we are talking about the process of doing some live chats, some video streams, all that. I think we've got the technology in place, and we're going to run some tests on that real soon. So head on over there to patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow.
Speaking of, I do want to give a shout-out to Jonathan Schulman, or is it Schulman? Schulman. I'm going with Schulman, who took the opportunity. Recently, Patreon enabled it to where you can pay for it a year in advance. And how recently he did that, and he took care of it for a year.
My man.
Got a little discount.
I saw that. That's our first ever annual subscriber.
That's the first ever. I mean, like, we love you, Oran. I know we need to get better of giving you guys more named shout-outs, but I did want to do that because that he was the first person to actually do the year one. But I love the commentary and the stuff that's been going back and forth, the comments between everybody on there. So it's been a lot of fun. So come join the party.
We appreciate it. By the way, before we get back to UFC 259, I did want to talk about the big news this week, the release of Junior Dos Santos and Alistair Overeem. Big news, I will say, you know, surprising is the wrong word, but when you see, you know, it's inevitable at some point, but when you see it happen, it does take you back a little bit. I was privy to some of the same information that I think I saw Ariel Helwani reporting that with Junior Dos Santos, it seems they were trying to line him up with Marcin Tybura in 3 weeks. And he said, listen, I can't take it on that short of notice. And they said, well, you know, ultimately, I think we're just going to go and have to part ways. It sounds like a raw deal, and it is. I mean, but to be honest with you, that's just kind of the cold nature of this business. I mean, this is the time when Dana White has made it very, very clear we need people to take fights. And Junior was on, you know, a 4-fight losing streak with 4 straight stoppage losses. And, you know, they asked him to come through in a pinch, and he couldn't come through. And I think they said at that point, you know, listen, if you're not willing to take these fights, you know, it's probably best we part ways. And it sucks because Junior's one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet. And I think I think he ends up somewhere, man. I really think he ends up somewhere else. I think, you know, the 4 straight losses don't help. But when you look at the names there, Francis Ngannou, Curtis Blaydes, Jairzinho Rozenstruik, Ciryl Gane. I mean, you're talking about the very upper echelon of the UFC's heavyweight division right now. So, you know, maybe he's not able to compete with the top 5, 6, 7 guys in the world, but can he compete with number 20, number 30, you know? Yeah, I think he can. And I think there's some marketability factor to him as well. He's a great representation of your company. He's never going to do anything to embarrass you as an organization. I think he ends up somewhere else, man. I really do. I think he's got some fighting ability left in him. Of course, those, you know, knockout losses are a little bit concerning, but, you know, 37 years old, I think he's got a few more years left in him. So I think we'll see Junior Dos Santos resurface somewhere. Now, the Alistair Overeem one, you know, I won't say surprising again. I mean, I think we were all wondering if he was going to retire. We weren't sure, right? I mean, he said, I wanted one more run. He lost. So does that mean, you know, he comes back for one more send-off? I mean, at most, I think he had one UFC fight left. And I think he might have come back for one kind of send-off retirement fight at best. Doesn't look like that'll happen. Now, with him, you know, he put out a statement. I haven't been able to talk to anybody close to him. At 40 years old, I don't know if that's the end of it. It would not surprise me if that's the last we've seen of Alistair Overeem. He has really been talking about retirement. He's been making really nice paychecks for a long time. Yeah. I think he's doing okay financially. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him again. I think we'll see Junior again. But I guess what I want to say is, like, I know that everybody just kind of, you know, dropped their jaws and was like, I can't believe this. And it does suck. I mean, these are two guys that we've been watching fight forever. But I got to say, I wasn't necessarily surprised. It sucks, but it's the nature of the beast right now. They need people to fight. And you know, they're bringing in new talent all the time. In order to bring in new talent, you know, Dana White has said it, right? I mean, he said it. He made it clear, like, we're going to cut 60 guys.
Yeah.
It just didn't shock me.
Well, especially with, like, the Overeem, that one definitely didn't surprise me in the sense that even the build-up before that last fight, he's like, this is my last go, guys, my last time of trying to go for the title, you know. And when he took that loss, you know that he's getting paid well. And then it's like, okay, we're just keeping him around just to give him another fight, you know, with knowing that they could get others to sort of fill in for a less rate or whatever. And it doesn't make it easier because, you know, he's such a fan favorite. But it is at the end of the day, it is a business. It wasn't like people were clamoring to, you know, it's not like they keep buy the tickets to even show their support for a particular fighter.
What a great point.
You know, it'd be one thing if they're like, dude, great point. You know, he's losing, but he's still bringing an extra 10,000 tickets or whatever. You know, they don't have that luxury to you know, to lean into his fan love, you know, from all these viewers out there. But JDS, yeah, that was a little bitter because you're right. I mean, he's always been a wonderful guy to deal with during fight weeks over the years. But it's tough, man. You start getting that many losses in a row when it makes it hard for the matchmakers to find a fight that makes sense to where, you know, I hate to even just try to think of the business side. You know, if they know that they're going to have to pay a decent amount, you know, you don't want to pay a decent amount and have them fighting a number, whatever, unranked 20, number 20-something or a guy that's not even near the thing, because then at that point, you know, it's going to be dumped down to somewhere low in the prelims, and I would think at least maybe even if it made it to sort of the featured prelim, but at that point, they probably look at what they want to pay for an overall card, and it's unfortunate, but it is a business. It doesn't make it easier, but I do hope that his feet land somewhere that somebody can use him. Might have to take a little bit of a pay hit, but I would hope that, you know, these guys have done what they needed to do to set up the next stage of life in advance, because, you know, I mean, they weren't spring chickens. I mean, they both knew that eventually, and if not somewhat soon, that the end was coming, that you would think that they were prepared. It just, you know, happened to get pushed a little bit further. But JDS, I think, still has some legs over him. I can imagine he has no desire to do it. You know, maybe unless
it felt like, even when he was saying like one last run, it was
maybe
just
a
kinda
kickboxing
like,
fight or something, yeah, or something. But
yeah, something like that. But I agree. Like, even I think even as we were talking to him, I just think it just seemed like he was just accepting. Like, yeah.
He was very accepting, and he this said it. For him to be like, "This is it," and he was like, "I'm good with it. Yep. I had a great career." In my mind, I knew, at least in my, I was already setting it up that if he lost the fight, that was it.
Yep.
I thought he would just announce and say that he was done. We didn't hear that part from him. That would have been nice if it would have came that way instead of being cut. It would have been nice. I almost wish that they would have gave him that option and said, this is where we're going. Would you rather say that you're retiring or whatever and blah, 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 blah?
I know. That's kind of what I thought we were with. That was probably the only surprise, that I thought we would get a retirement announcement. Now, I guess with this, and who knows what they worked out behind the scenes. I reached out, by the way, I reached out to the UFC on both of these to try to get a little, hey, tell me. Nobody would answer me in terms of saying something, because I thought maybe Alistair was like, hey, can you release me? Like, I know I can't compete at this level, but I would like to go have one or two. Because I was going to say, the advantage of this for Alistair is, if he does want to take a kickboxing match or he fight can. Somewhere else, he can. He doesn't have to get their permission. Whereas if he retired and then somebody said, hey, we want to put you in this special exhibition match or whatever, he'd have to go get permission. Right. So it is kind of a benefit. But, yeah, I was
a little
bit surprised,
nice,
as well.
Yeah, it would be nice if they gave him that option. Let him, on paper, retire, but give him his release behind the scenes.
Let him go out with that honor. Yeah.
Let him go out with that honor. They both deserve that sort of thing. Like, I just wish that in some of these cases, but obviously, if they did have that decision, maybe he wasn't willing to go out and say, like, just to have it on record that I retired, so that he didn't, you know, shut off potential suitors or, you know, have to deal with the whole, oh, you signed another fight, but you just said that you retired. You know, maybe just didn't want to deal with it, and he was hoping that it, deep down there is some sort of something that wants to compete. But if there possibly wasn't, which it seemed like over him that he was there, I would have just, it would have been a nice gesture for that to be the way that it ended, instead of getting released just like anybody else that had a fraction of the career that these guys did.
Yeah, damn shame. Well, we'll see what happens to them in the next phase of their career. Like I said, I think we'll at least see Junior Santos one more time. But, hey, man, this is the harsh reality of the sport, man. It does not wait around for you, man. It's a young man's game. And these people that make it, you know, long as they do, they're the rarity, not the exception. So, getting back to UFC 259, the main card kicks off with another key matchup, Thiago Mejia Santos versus Alexander Rakic. And I wanted to feature Alexander Rakic because I do think that this kid is dangerous. I think he is one of the future faces of the light heavyweight division, and I think this is a big matchup for him. Not to say that Mejia can't come in and spoil all of that, but it does feel like the momentum is on Rakic's side, and Thiago is in, I don't want to say a must-win type situation, but man, when you think about where he was recently to where he is now, man, I think this is a big moment for Mejia, but I think he's facing an absolute stud now, Alexander Rakic. But here is what Rakic had to say to us at the media day.
Alexander, I know you've, you know, had some big fights already, but you know, main event, that sort of thing. But this, being on this massive pay-per-view, three title fights, does it feel like a big fight for you?
Former title challenger, the third in a row, it's amazing. And fighting Thiago, it's a great opportunity to me to show the UFC that I'm coming for the title.
Was there any part of you, I know you would never wish anything bad on another fighter, but was there any part of you that thought, maybe I'll sneak in and fight Jan this week, something will happen to Adesanya, or maybe the card will get changed up? You know, these times are crazy right now.
Yes, of course. You know, I had it in my mind, and my coaches told me also, you know, with this COVID thing, you know, maybe you're gonna step up, and I say, okay, perfect, I'm gonna do it, you know. I'm gonna be ready for five rounds. I did a hell of a camp and ready to go.
Did you spend any part of your training kind of getting ready for Jan or no?
Yeah, we did always, sometimes we put an extra round. You know, you never know. You know. So, but then when I wrote on the interviews that Glover was going to be the backup, then I told myself, okay, the chance is going to be very low to get a fight. You know.
So you talk about Maheta, you know, former title challenger. A lot of people think he beat John Jones, but he has had two losses in a row now. So what do you make of him? Do you feel like he's still that same guy that almost beat John Jones?
Yes. Santos came out with in the fight against Jones with two broken knees, I would say, you know, and he did surgery on both of those, and he did a long layoff, and I know how does it feel, because I had also two knee surgeries, and I know how long does it take to heal. Not only you can be the physical part can get it done really early, but the mental part gonna be, you know, long. And then the fight against Glover, you saw in that fight a little bit ring rust. It's still dangerous. He dropped Glover two or three times, I don't know, and then Glover finished him. And I'm expecting now a motivated Santos, because he lost the last two in a row, and he's going to come forward with some, you know, capoeira things, flying knee jumps, you know. But anyways, I'm ready for him.
You used the word dangerous, and I was going to ask you, I mean, up at the top of the light heavyweight division, you guys are all monsters, but is he one of the most dangerous guys up there?
I mean, everybody's dangerous. He has his strong sides, and he has also his weaknesses, like all of those guys has. We're going to find out on Saturday.
And I wonder, do you feel like this is a moment? I mean, I know it's your career, but this feels like the light heavyweight division may be changing. You know, you look at guys like you, Prochaska, Ankalaev. Do you feel like this is kind of a moment where you're getting this switch, basically this new generation?
Absolutely. The new era is coming, and we are those guys that you named and the other guys, you know, they're like under 30 or 30. So I'm 29. And soon we are going to take over, and one of those guys going to fight for the title.
Last thing for me, you said, you know, former title challenger three in a row. I mean, you win this fight. Do you feel like people need to be talking about you as for the title next?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I need to make a great performance on Saturday, and like I do always, I need to let the UFC know that I'm coming for the title, and I want it so bad.
All right, there he is, Alexander Rakic. Like I said, five meaningful fights, I think, on this pay-per-view main card, including three championship fights. By the way, you mentioned Paulo Costa a little bit earlier. I did want to touch base real quick on the Paulo Costa hungover in his fight with Israel Adesanya story. I do want to say, because I think a lot of people have been like saying, like, this is just absolutely made up. There's no way this dude drank a bottle of wine. I'm going to tell you right now, I think the MMA Roadshow listeners probably have some special insight into how things work on Fight Island, and how the sleep schedule works, and how we used to handle fight days, which was basically wake up, get smashed in the afternoon, take a nice long, you know, 8-hour nap, and then wake up like it's a fresh day in the middle of the night. So I honestly completely believe Paulo Costa that he couldn't sleep and decided to have a few drinks to try to settle down, and didn't necessarily pay off for him, because that's kind of the way we led our life in Abu Dhabi. I have, for better sleep lately, rather than just alcohol, I've been trying some CBD products, including like the CBD melatonin type blends, which have actually been helping me sleep a little bit more. But what's crazy is in Abu Dhabi, you can't even bring CBD products over there, man.
Oh,
they're so anti, like, drug stuff, whatever. Like, you can't even bring CBD products. So he wouldn't have even been able to bring that. I'm going to venture a guess that Paulo Costa may have smoked a little bit of Mary Jane once or twice in his life.
I bet he did.
But you can't bring that over there.
If he didn't, he should.
He should have, but you can't bring that over there. So I'm going to be honest with you. Now, do I think that's the reason he lost the fight? I do not.
No.
I absolutely do not. Do I believe that he did drink a bottle of wine and maybe was a little bit flat? You know, maybe it did affect him a little bit? I do. Do I believe this is something he probably should have just kept to himself? Yes. Yes, I do very much. Because I tell you what, man, and I love me some Paulo Costa, some Borrachinha. Get rid of that eraser, man. I like the Borrachinha.
Yeah.
I love me some Paulo Costa. And I actually believe that he drank a full bottle of wine, shouldn't have, and that he was a little bit feeling off. I do not believe it was 100% to blame for his loss to Israel Adesanya, who, oh, by the way, happens to be pretty decent as a mixed martial artist.
He's okay.
And I also believe that you are not going to elicit 1 ounce of sympathy for yourself.
That's it.
You know what I mean? So, my man just had to hit the bottle, bro. Cut him some slack. Bro, this is the MMA Road Show. We are the experts of hitting the bottle. We still can't even give him any sympathy for that, man. That is self-imposed. Nobody's going to feel bad for you. So I like me some Paulo Costa. I like me some Borrachinha. I think he should have just kept this one to himself.
He should have kept it to himself. I wonder if he got some bad advice from some people around him, which, I don't know, you know, thought that that would be a decent way to just,
like,
do it.
Tell him, Paulo. They just need to know the truth.
They just need to know, you know, that you weren't yourself, mm-mm, you know. Like, yeah, something like that. You're not going to get any particular sympathy. And, yes, it quite possibly, maybe it is true that he did drink the bottle or whatever. But, I mean, one, it's just a bottle, bro. How big is this bottle that it's going to mess you up the next day? Come on.
That is true.
Step your game up if you're getting hungover after.
I mean,
and it was probably a skinny bottle. It's probably a little skinny bottle, like skinny leg bottle. It was pretty skinny.
He's like, bro, I had 3 Sweet Touch lychees the night before.
And I was fucking wasted. I had 990 milliliters of sweet lychee. But yeah, that's the kind of shit. Shout out
to the Taiwan beer company.
Just own the loss, man. Don't.
Yeah.
Don't throw an excuse. Even if you weren't trying to make an excuse, even if you say, like, this is not an excuse, I'm just saying, it's like, yeah, that's still an excuse.
I don't think it helps you at all.
It really, really doesn't. I mean, it's not like he was fighting a dietary sickness and he's like, guys, I was shitting my brains out for 18 hours before the fight.
People might
and
feel
I
sorry
just
for that one.
That's a legit
might
reason.
Not want to hear it from you.
Yeah.
A little bit too much
information.
Like,
I hit it from the commission, you know, and I was able to make it into the fight.
I soiled myself in the locker room.
I soiled myself. I didn't have no draws under my cup.
I was originally supposed to be wearing white shorts, and I had to change to the black shorts. Like, there you go.
Yeah, you're not going to get sympathy from it, but whatever. Yeah, regardless, even if the way that that fight played out, I think even if he felt absolutely fantastic, Izzy looked so good in that fight that it didn't matter.
All right. Well, I just had to give a shout out. I do believe his story. I don't believe that it impacted the fight. So
not to the point of where that would be the cause of why you lost the fight.
Love you, Paulo, but that one's going to stick with him for a long time.
Now people are going to make up a meme about it.
It's
like,
just going to be jokes all the time.
Yeah, well, we'd have to think about it. We won't waste any more time. But somebody is going to, if it hasn't already, the wine is going to be the new nickname meme for him for sure.
100%.
He opened that up.
ESPN prelims, Dominic Cruz versus Casey Kinney. Big one there, man. Dominic Cruz, you know, does he still have it? Is he still Dominic Cruz, or has time finally caught up to him? We'll find out. I mean, future UFC Hall of Famer in the discussion for greatest bantamweight of all time, but will it catch up to him? Man, that's a big one. And Casey Kinney is no joke. He's on a little bit of a roll. Big, big prelim fight there. Kyler Phillips versus Song Yadong. A couple of studs. I think 25 and 23 years old between these two. I was a little surprised this was the matchup they made. Two young studs in their career. But it's, you know, you make what you can make right now, I guess. But that's a key fight as well between two young prospects. And then one that really stands out to me, Askar Askarov versus Joseph Benavidez. Joseph Benavidez, the comeback from his latest title loss, swore to us afterwards he would fight again. Is openly admitting that he's never going to challenge for a title again. And I think that mentally that's probably the right way to approach a career. But I'm so interested to see how he performs here, because openly saying that I know I'll never fight for a title again, but also saying I want to fight the best competition available. And Askar Askarov is an absolute stud, man. This is a monster. This is no, oh, I'm just taking fun fights now, or I'm just taking names that interest me. Askar Askarov is a guy that has no name value whatsoever. I mean, I know he has a lot of name value because he's got the same name twice. How can you forget that? He's got real name value. But as far as the fans, they have no idea who Askar Askarov is. but he's an absolute stud. And by the way, he did an interview with us. Rizvan Magomedov was his translator, and Asker's got a little swagger about him, man. We've never heard him talk before because, you know, he's basically deaf, and he needs a Russian-English translator, and so we haven't gotten to interview him a whole lot, but he's got a little swagger to him. But this is a big fight, but I wanted a chance to talk to Joseph Benavidez and find out where his head's at because he's still right there at the top of the division. I think he's probably right that he's not getting another title shot, but he still wants to fight the absolute best, you know, competition available, which I think is such a unique position to be in. So I think this is a big fight for Joseph Benavidez and dictates kind of where he goes for the rest of his career. And so we had a chance to catch up with him for a few minutes. Here's what Joe B had to say.
Well, Joseph, last time we saw you, obviously it was a very, you know, emotional evening for you. You know, I know it's been a lot of time since then, but give me the idea. Was it tough to start again, you know, to kind of get back in there and jump back on this grind?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah, our life, I said it wasn't. I mean, I was getting fight offers, you know, I mean, not immediately after, obviously, but, you know, like earlier than this, and I just needed the time to, you know, fall in love with the sport again and, you know, realize the, I guess, the kind of acceptance that, like, you know what, like, that's probably my last title fight. Like, that's not going to happen. So there's that part, and which is, you know, kind of like freeing in a way as well. You're just kind of like, oh, well, now why do I have to do this? And my first fight offers a few months after is kind of like, well, I didn't have a why. Like, why do I want to do this? Like, I didn't need this. I didn't need that. And there was always a why before that. So it was just about really falling back in love with it and enjoying training before I took a fight, having enough time to, like, you know, just enjoy even the holidays and be like, you know what, I want a 2 full months after, you know, just to do that and, like, enjoy life. So, but also it was really about fighting still a guy at the top, and Asghar was the right opponent, being ranked number 3, the highest person I could fight that's not lined up. So that was another reason. But, yeah, it took me a while. I mean, it was tough. It was devastating. And it was weird. Like, my first title fight ever was probably still my hardest acceptance, because I really had nothing to fall back on. I was so young, and that was like my whole life, that, like, I didn't see it any other way. I didn't have something to fall back on. I wasn't really anywhere near, like, complete as a person, to the point where, like, that was all I thought I was worth, you know, as being this and that, and, like, that was where all my kind of, like, self-worth came from. So that was honestly still the hardest one, being the first title fight. And even the second Figueiredo fight was a little harder, because it was annoying the way that first one ended, and I couldn't control it. This one was clean, cut and dry. Like, obviously you're still, like, mad and, like, how did this happen? And, oh, that was a weird shot. Did this. But, like, it's normal things we deal with where, like, so anyway, so, but the fact that it was probably my last title shot, that was kind of the hardest part. And then just falling in love with the sport again and finding, like, hey, well, now I just need to fight because it's fun. I'm challenging myself and proving to myself I can still fight at the top. So I need a guy at the top, and Asghar was perfect.
Yeah. Do you remember the moment that was able to click for you? Because it's interesting, right? Like, it's got to be a bittersweet thing for you. Like, this sport has provided you a great life. You've, you know, met your wife, you know, great relationships. But obviously you've come up short in these spots, you know what I mean? So I'm sure it's like a bittersweet thing. So do you remember the spot that you said, no, I do love this stuff, man. I'm good at it, and I enjoy it.
It wasn't like a certain spot as much. It was just kind of like, it was just like a slowly back into it. Like, all right, I'm going to train, but, like, I don't feel like training for a fight. Oh, you know what? Like, I really enjoyed that today. And then a lot of it was just the time, too. It was like, all right, well, if I am just trying to, like, enjoy my life as well, like, I need to fight in, like, March and just, like, spend the needed time, you know, holidays and all that kind of stuff. And then just the more I trained, I realized, like, oh, I'm going because I like it. Like, I'm not going for a fight. I'm, like, enjoying it. I'm, like, very competitive in practice still every day. I'm looking forward to it. And I was like, oh, like, it wasn't as much as, like, there was a, oh, my God, this is so cool. Because I'm grateful, you know, every day I train and I get to. But sometimes getting in after a fight, especially after a tough loss, is, it's like you're doing it because you have to. You're just kind of like, ah, got to get back to it. Embarrassed to go in the gym, and it's not as fun as it is, but, like, I have to do it because I'll probably have a fight coming up again. I need to get paid and this and that. But this was just, like, I was training for fun. I realized, like, oh, I'm not training for anything, and I'm just enjoying it. Could probably take a fight now. Like, this is good. This is fun. And that was really the process. It wasn't like a light went off. I was just kind of like, all right, like this is, I'm just doing it. And I don't have anything else on the mind but challenging myself, getting better, and enjoying it and being grateful for the hours I get to spend doing it.
So they give you Askarov. I know you're a fan of the sport.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been in the organization very long either. So, I mean, is this a guy that you had watched much of? Like when they gave you the name, did you know, okay, here's what I'm going to be facing?
Yeah, I'd seen him. I'd seen him fight before. I know he's undefeated, and I was looking at the rankings, you know, for fights. Like I said, I've always wanted to fight the guys at the top, you know, to get to the title and in between, taking on the toughest guys, and that was him. And, you know, when I saw him at 3, I was like, oh, that's cool, because I've seen him fight a few times too. I think we were on the last card together. I saw him fight people that, like, I watched closely, like Tim Elliott and Brandon Moreno's fights, and he fought them on his other two fights. So I had already seen him and been a little familiar with him as well. So the fact, just the ranking, the skill set, the undefeated record was like, oh, that's the kind of guys like I want to fight. That's fun for me. Like, it's not exciting to be like, you're fighting this guy off of Contenders or, you know, or that was on the Ultimate Fighter show that you coach. It's like, oh, like that's honestly weird. Like, someone was asking me the other day about, you know, just compare the Canelo fight, and it's like a boxer still at the top can take this fight that no one knows or whatever. I didn't see how the fight played out, but I remember it being like, I don't know who he's fighting. And be like, that'd be more stressful, honestly, because it's a fight. Anything can happen, and we know that. And it's like, that'd be more stressful fighting, like, this guy's ranked number, you know, 15. No one knows him. There's nothing to gain, but, like, it's a fight, and you could, like, so just it's just about fighting the best guys. And like I said, it hit all the marks on the date, the time, the name, and everything.
Canelo fight played out pretty much like you'd expected.
Yeah, I didn't know.
So last thing for me, what's the career path for you now? Because, I mean, as you said, this guy's a top-ranked guy. He's a killer. You're saying, I still want to fight the best guys available. I mean, what's the career path? Like, you keep beating guys like this, which you're clearly capable of doing. You might back into another title fight, not even mean to.
You know, it's funny. I mean, I kind of just let that part go, honestly. And in a way, it's weird because these are the questions I've been answering my whole career at the top. You know, When I debuted in the UFC, I was ranked number one in the world at bantamweight behind the champion Cruz. And that was my first fight in the UFC. And now, you know, I'm number two in another division. And it's just kind of like, that's been the thing forever. And even though it's still up there and it's like, oh, I can compete. My last fight was for the title. I can compete with this, the top three, top one, everything. It's just, I don't know, like, mentally it's kind of just been like an acceptance, like that was probably my last title fight that I'm gonna do. And I don't know, so now it's just more about just the right fights, doing it for fun, taking it time by time. Like every fight week offers a different experience, you know, and a different kind of adventure. And it's kind of like, when I have fun in camp and I enjoy this, like, I'm enjoying fight week so far. Obviously it hasn't got to the tough part and the weight cut and everything that goes with it, but like, I'm just on a fight-by-fight basis, honestly. That's really it. It's just, hey, did I enjoy that fight week? Was that fun for me and challenging and, like, kind of the benefits and the riches I get from competing? I'll do it again. If I was kind of like, oh, that was honestly just nerve-wracking. I hate cutting, like, then I don't have to. But it's just a fight-by-fight basis, totally. And just the right opponents. Like, I'm not in a rush now. I'm not like, oh, well, next I can fight the one guy. Then I'll see how the title fight plays out. I'm just kind of like, we'll see what happens. I just can take it actually fight by fight without this, like, ghost I'm always chasing, you know? And it's kind of nice. It's different. I imagine it's kind of weird because I guess I don't know if other fighters think that, but there has to be a good portion of fighters that are in the UFC and know, like, I'm probably never going to go for a title, but this is fun, you know? And I've had my chances, I've had my opportunities, but it's kind of like, oh, I'm just fighting some dudes now. And, you know, it's kind of freeing, not thinking about anything else. Look, all this could happen, and obviously you're asking questions for it, but I'm not thinking about that. Like, I accepted that was probably my last title fight.
Right, so there he is, good friend of the show, Joe B. Good friend of everybody. Just good dude, Joseph Benavidez. But I'm telling you, man, this is, I don't want to say a crossroads type position for him, but, man, you just kind of want to know where he stands from here. And, you know, again, I would think he's at a position in his career where he could just kind of cherry pick some easier fights or tell some, you know, whatever, pick some storylines, and he's not. So, interesting fight for him. Amanda Lemos versus Lavinia Souza is the final ESPN prelim, and of course, the early fights. It gets good all the way down to here. You got Tim Elliott on the early prelims. You got Sean Brady on there. Undefeated CFFC vet is on there. Rogério Bontorin versus Kai Car France could be a good one. Carlos Olberg is making his debut against Kennedy and Jekwu. That's a good fight. Alon Cruz versus Uros Medic. Mario Bautista, Trevin Jones. I mean, there's all kinds of fights start to finish. It's going to be a fun one. We're going to have it all covered for you. And, of course, patreon.com/CMAroadshow.
For the half. And a half.
Love it. It's going to be a big fight week, man. Today may have not been the greatest press conference of all time, but we got weigh-ins in the morning. Let's keep fingers crossed that we have no – I'm not even going to say it.
Does not even say it.
Just edit that part out. We're good. We'll have you all covered. MMA Junkie, tune in. And then, of course, the and a half over at patreon.com/MMA Roadshow. It's going to be a big weekend. So for now, let's get going. Thanks for listening.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.